Hello and welcome to Beyond Reproach. This is Stephanie Domingo. I'm here with a summer break re-release talking about a listener favorite. We asked the people to write in with their favorite scandals that we've done for season three. And it was kind of overwhelming. The scandal that listeners liked of mine this season was Elvis by a very wide margin. And I get why. The story is bananas. The fact that Elvis was allowed to come to the Nixon White House with a bunch of guns, high on drugs, asking to be a federal drug enforcement agent. Like, what? Yeah, life is stranger than fiction, always. And I'm just so happy that everyone loved this episode as much as I did. So we tapped a listener, our friend Jen at The Dork Web. She's on Instagram and TikTok as The Dork Web, like dark web, but dorks. Obviously, she likes us. So yeah, she's a dork. She has such nice things to say about this episode, and I love it. And I hope everyone loves it as well. Bye, guys.
Hi, Stephanie and Tux. This is Jen from The Dork Web. I love Elvis. So when I heard that Stephanie's episode was on the king himself meeting Nixon, I lost it. I couldn't press play fast enough and then proceeded to laugh my ass off. Thank you guys so much for this episode. I listen to it whenever I need a laugh, whenever I need a break from the news. And it's history. I'm still learning, right? The photos that Stephanie found for your Instagram are incredible. Everything and more that I pictured while I was listening to the story. My favorite detail being the numbers he chose to put on the top of the pages of his American Airlines notepad paper to the President of the United States. And now every time I fly, I will start by saying, "I am on the plane," in the voice of Tux himself. I love the stories of the fame and the money and the glory and the journey and the fans, but thank you guys for rounding him out, making him real as you do. Thank you guys for being real ones, always doing our homework for us, keeping all of us real, our heroes, our history, our legends. Not even Elvis was safe. Oh, not even Obama. I love it. To me, this is quintessential Beyond Reproach. I love the stories you share, like Elvis loves guns and an open pharmacy. Thanks for my drugs, Dr. Lurzel, Dr. Domingo. Thanks for time re-releasing these great ones. I guess they'll hold me over until I get my fall fix. Thanks for having me on. Oh, thank you very much.
My story this episode revolves around the first white entertainer to use his pelvis on the TV.
Elvis?
Correct. The man who most famously appropriated black music for a white audience. Mm-hmm. I'm talking about a king. The king.
The king.
Not Christ. I don't know that girl. The king of rock and roll, Elvis Presley. Oh. So my scandal is about the time when he met President Richard Nixon and begged to become a federal narcotics agent.
I do know this story.
Okay.
What a fun story.
It's the best story. So on December 21st, 1970, Elvis popped by the White House for a little chat and a big ask. He wanted in on the newly minted war on drugs. So the details of this literally inexplicable meeting come from memoirs, interviews, firsthand accounts, biographer notes, and recently released White House documents. Just as a disclaimer, this is by far the most absurd historic event, excluding, of course, the last 4 years of this waking nightmare that I've ever come across. But before we start, I just want to do a toast.
Yes.
A toast.
To peanut butter and banana sandwiches with bacon.
That's right. You like those. Let us raise our glass to drugs.
Yay. Ooh, you don't have to make me. You don't have to tell me twice.
This story began innocently enough a few days prior with an argument over money. So Elvis's father, Vernon, and his wife, Priscilla, got really mad at him because he had spent over $100,000 in one L.A. shopping spree.
Oh, my.
Yes. He bought 32 guns and 10 Mercedes Benzes.
32 guns?
Correct. 32 guns and 10 Benzes.
What do you need 10 cars for in one fell swoop?
You give them away as gifts, don't you know? Really? Yeah. He was annoyed that his father and his wife were kind of like getting on his back for this amount of money that he thought was kind of like chump change.
Yeah.
So he bounces. Like he leaves Graceland. He's rocking a wild purple velvet suit, carrying a few of the guns that he just bought. He drove to the airport and caught the next available flight just on a whim.
With all those guns?
Correct. He only grabbed a few of them, but yes.
Yeah. Oh, the 70s. Right? What a wild time to be alive. So holy shit.
He jumps on the next available flight. It just so happened to be to DC.
Okay.
On a whim because, you know, drugs.
When I'm mad at my husband, I will leave the house and go take a walk. Wait, I'm not going to fly to DC.
You don't go to JFK and go to, you don't grab your guns and go.
I mean, I guess I don't have $100,000 to just like throw away on cars and shit. So
Priscilla, she wrote in her memoirs, this is a quote, "We were mystified. For the first time, he was traveling alone without even one bodyguard. Elvis didn't even know his own phone number, nor did he carry cash. How was he going to get around?"
Oh my God.
Right?
Yeah, not having cash on you back then was like, yes. Nobody took credit cards.
Exactly. Like, yeah. Exactly. This whole story is insane. So despite all of this, he still hopped a flight to D.C. and he checked into the Hotel Washington under the name John Burroughs. I don't know what money he had. I don't know how he bought this flight. I don't know how he got a hotel room. I'm guessing because he's Elvis.
Yeah, I'm sure that.
Yeah.
I'm sure that if Elvis walked up to your front desk and was like, "I'm John Burroughs," they'd be like, "Okay, Elvis, here's your room." Yeah, I know, right?
Oh, but he didn't stay in D.C. long. So there are a few slightly different theories on why he abruptly left D.C., all of which kind of paint the same picture. According to the Smithsonian, he just got bored. Mm-hmm. He got to D.C. He didn't have any of his homies around. He's just like, what do I do here?
What do you do in D.C.? If you're not...
Politics?
Yeah. If you're not a politician.
Yeah. What do you do as Elvis in a crushed velvet suit in just a random hotel by yourself?
Yeah.
With no money?
Drugs.
There you go. You be knowing. So the Washington Post said that he had developed an itchy facial rash, so he wanted to find a doctor.
Okay.
In L.A.
In L.A.? Okay.
As one does.
Where Oh, Tennessee?
Yeah, he was in Memphis, then he went to D.C., and now he's going to L.A.
Okay. Uh-huh.
Because he needed to find a doctor.
Sure.
Don't you know?
Mm-hmm. That's where all the doctors live.
Absolutely.
They don't have doctors in D.C.
They don't.
Just politicians.
It's a little-known fact they don't. according to Politico, and I think all of these stories are kind of true. According to Politico, Elvis just wanted to, like, hang out with his West Coast friends. Like, he had got to D.C., yeah. He was all alone, he wanted to, like, go scoop up his homies.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So he flew to L.A. to pick up his longtime friend, a man named Jerry Skilling. So this dude arrives at LAX at 3 a.m. Again, I don't know how he was called. There's no cell phones, but somehow word has gotten to him, and he picks Elvis up at 3 a.m. and takes him back to his mansion because he had a mansion in L.A.
Okay, good for him.
Right? Yeah, good for him. Yeah. You know.
He made a lot of movies, mm-hmm. So I'm sure he would have royalties. Had to have had. He would have needed like a home base.
Oh, in I LA. See what you mean. Yeah. Okay.
He was very active in the in filmmaking in the 60s and 70s.
I did not know that. Yeah,
they're terrible. I've seen a few of them. They're really. It's all like teeny bopper bullshit. I mean, like it's.
Are there good movies that were made in the 60s?
There are okay. Some, not a lot, but there are some.
Name one.
Guess Who's Coming to Dinner.
Okay, that is a good movie.
Yeah.
Okay. I thought I could stump you. Clearly, I don't know who you are. Shame on me. Yeah. You could probably name 10 movies. Yeah. So he's in L.A. So the two men, they hung out for a night, and then they packed up some guns, some more guns, and they caught a red eye back to D.C.
I'm shook that Elvis was all about those guns.
It's coming. I'm gonna dive into that next, actually. Okay. So flying back to DC, they just so happened to be on the same flight as Senator George Murphy, who was a California senator at the time, who previously was like an actor.
Okay.
But he acted in like shitty movies and musicals.
Okay.
So the two of them on this red-eye flight, they kind of hit it off. They're talking about politics. Some people speculate that it was Murphy that inspired what came next.
Okay.
I don't really think so, but a bit of background on late-stage Elvis. My guy was obsessed with guns.
I had no idea.
Obsessed with guns and collecting police badges.
Really?
Okay. He was 7 years old, you guys.
Yeah.
So he was made an honorary police officer of dozens of police departments across the nation. Really? He made friends with cops everywhere he went because he was always donating to police associations and also just donating to police departments. Yeah. So his passion went even further because he bought a police scanner, a radio, and a flashing blue light.
Oh, no.
So he started patrolling the streets of Memphis.
What?
Occasionally pulling over speeding cars. He'd give them a lecture, an autograph, and then he'd drive off. And they'd all be so fucking confused.
Like, Elvis just pulled me over.
Yes.
What's happening?
Yes.
Is this real life?
Because drugs.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. So he became fixated on getting a federal badge, one that certified him as an agent of the Federal Bureau of Narcotics and Dangerous Drugs, which was the precursor to the DEA.
Okay.
This narc bag, wow, this narc badge to him was like a symbol of like ultimate power.
Yeah.
According to Priscilla, she wrote this in her memoirs, he believed he could legally enter any country both wearing guns and carrying any drugs he wished.
If he had a badge. He's like, it's cool. I'm a DEA agent.
Yeah, look at this.
Or whatever.
I got it. Yeah. Yeah. BNDE. Yeah.
So he thought if he was a, what was it called again? It wasn't DEA, but.
Like, the Bureau of Narcotics and Dangerous Drugs.
Okay. So if he belonged, if he had a badge, yes. Then he could just have drugs on him.
Correct.
At any time. He's correct. Like, it's cool.
In any country in the world. Yeah, like I got this, like I'm on the job.
I'm a federal agent, don't worry about it.
Exactly, exactly.
Okay.
So getting this BNDD badge would combine two of Elvis's favorite hobbies, one collecting police paraphernalia, obviously, and also just popping pills.
Uh-huh, yes.
So he used opiates, codeine, as well as Quaaludes. He also dabbled in antihistamines.
Really?
Which I thought, like, I mean, they do make you feel a little woozy.
But not in a fun way.
Apparently to him. Okay. But I think when you mix all of them together, sure. It can okay. be really fun, yeah. I think. So, yeah, antihistamines, tranquilizers like Valium, barbiturates, sleeping pills, hormones, and laxatives. These were all things damn. That he were just mixing together. And
weird. I guess I know he had a lot of, like, digestive problems, so I don't know if the laxatives were, like, for fun. But still.
Yeah.
What the hormones? What? Whatever.
Yeah.
You do you, Elvis.
Yeah. I guess like testosterone, like makes yeah. you feel a certain, I don't fucking know. He was doing an experiment on himself, sure, it seems yeah. like. So while flying cross country, he had gotten himself pretty worked up talking to Senator Murphy about what he saw was the moral decline of America.
Oh, Jesus.
He was on a mission, don't you know, Elvis. To save the country from the scourge he saw sweeping it. Can you guess what this scourge was?
Oh, God. Drugs?
I mean, yes and no. It's the usual. It's the left.
Yeah.
Hippies.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Okay.
He was talking about hippies, Students for a Democratic Society, the SDS, and of course, you know, the Black Panther Party. Because he loves guns, but not for black people.
Uh-huh.
He would later include the Beatles on the list. He fucking hated the Beatles. I'm going to get into this later. He had like a hate burnt boner for them, for sure.
Weird. Okay.
So Murphy, just hearing Elvis's passion about, you know, this scourge, he offered to make an appointment for Elvis with the BNDD.
Wow.
He's okay. like, I'll get you in. Like, it's cool. It's cool. But Elvis was like, nah, man, I got this. I'm going to do this myself. So he took out a pen and he scribbled a letter to Nixon.
I mean, he's Elvis. Yeah.
And I say scribbled literally because he asked for American Airlines stationery. That's where this letter was written on. I kid you not, on five pages of
six. 5 pages?
It's little, you know. Yeah. It's like, the little notepads.
Yeah,
yeah okay, it's okay. A little notepad.
Okay.
So he got what he had been feeling off his spirit. He wanted to be made a federal agent so he could do what he did best. Going undercover.
Because he's Elvis.
Nobody knows who he is. Don't look at me like that, Tux.
Oh my God.
Drugs, man, drugs. So his letter was written like one big drug-fueled stream of consciousness. There are no paragraph breaks. There's the weirdest, most confusing capitalizations. Like, it's almost tweet-like.
Yeah. Wow.
It's so bizarre. It looks like it was written by a child.
I love this story.
This story is really fun.
I'm like, I have never smiled for this long of a period of time.
Your face is going to hurt. I was so happy when I found this story.
This is incredible.
Right? Oh, my God. So I'm going to read the letter in full just because it's short.
Yeah.
Even though it was 5 pages, yeah, it's really short. Pages. And it's like, shit is insane. So it starts, actually, I'm going to have a sip.
I was just going to say, you need to take a drink.
Yeah.
Loosen those jaw gums.
Okay. It starts. Dear Mr. President, first, I would like to introduce myself. I am Elvis Presley. And I admire you and have great respect for your office. Have great respect, all capitalized.
Okay. It really is like a tweet.
Yes. I talked to Vice President Agnew in Palm Springs a week ago and expressed my concern for our country. The drug culture, all capitalized, the hippie elements, all capitalized, the SDS, Black Panthers, etc., do not consider me as their enemy, or as they call it, the establishment. The establishment, capitalized.
Uh-huh.
I call it America, and I love it. Love is capitalized. Sir, I can and will be of any service is capitalized, that I can to help the country out. I have no concerns or motives other than helping the country out. So I wish not to be given a title or an appointed position. I can and will do more good if I were made a federal agent at large, all capitalized. And I will help out by doing it my way through my communications with people of all ages. First and foremost, is capitalized. I am an entertainer, but all I need is the federal is capitalized, credentials. I am on the plane. Plane is capitalized, with Senator George Murphy, and we is capitalized, have been discussing the problems that our country is faced with.
I can't take it.
It's a lot. I'm like halfway through.
I am on the plane.
Okay.
Oh, I can't take it. Okay.
So, sir, I am staying is capitalized, at the Washington Hotel in room 505, 506, and 507. I have two men who work with me by the name of Jerry Skilling and Sonny West. I am registered under the name John Burroughs. I will be here for as long as it takes to get the credentials of a federal agent, both capitalized. I have done an in-depth study of drug abuse. Drug abuse is capitalized.
By abusing drugs.
And communist brainwashing techniques, all capitalized. What? And I am right in the middle of the whole thing, where I can and will do the most good. I am glad is capitalized, to help, just so long as it is kept very private. Private is capitalized. You can have your staff or whomever call me anytime today, tonight, or tomorrow. Tomorrow is capitalized. I was just nominated the coming year for... Shit. Okay. I was nominated the coming year one of America's 10 most outstanding young men. America's 10 most capitalized. That will be January 18th in my hometown, two words, both capitalized, of Memphis, Tennessee. I am sending you the short autobiography about myself so you can better understand this approach. I would love to meet you just to say hello if you're not too busy. Respectfully, Elvis Presley. P.S. Oh. I believe that you, sir is capitalized, were one of the top 10 outstanding men of America, also all capitalized. I have a personal gift for you, also which I would like to present to you, and you can accept it or I will keep it for you until you can take it.
Do we know what this gift was?
It's coming.
Okay.
It's a coming. So they landed in Washington, D.C. a little bit before 6 a.m., and they hopped into a rented limo, and they drove directly to the White House gates, where Elvis himself gets out of the car and hands these 5 notes to really confused guards.
Yeah.
gets back into his limo and goes to his hotel to await an answer.
Oh my God. Okay. This is the best story I've ever heard. This is the most insane shit
I've ever researched in my life. Like, in like, no hyperbole. This is, nothing makes sense. Nothing at all makes sense, but also I love it so much.
Take 9 plus 10 and we're live.
Let's get it, fam.
I'm one of your hosts, Hamish Lakhmi.
And I'm your other host, Aaron Conway.
And welcome to our show, The Third Wheel.
You know when you like crush on someone, you just sometimes act a bit like silly in front of them?
Pop, pop, Aaron.
You guys just roast each other.
Those are ugly topics to talk about and they're really uncomfortable. Being out of your comfort zone is where the growth happens.
There were children who were carrying guns to school. Children as in like 13 to 16 year olds. They used to carry guns to school. There were teachers who came before us who had been shot dead by the students.
I've realized significantly since before meditating and after meditating how much more I just notice things around me and realize things, and it makes life a lot more just beautiful.
So I live in between the seafood market where it's supposed to have first originated and the hospital where it was first sort of confirmed and diagnosed.
Like jumping on this podcast, The Third Wheel, like, I love being The Third Wheel right now. It's fantastic.
So he goes back to the hotel and I'm just kind of paused there.
Okay.
So the appointment secretary to Nixon, a man named Dwight Chapin, he wrote a piece in Politico in December, and that's how I found out about this story.
Okay.
He says that he's the reason why this meeting took place at all. He first thought it was a goof.
Yeah.
He thought that his coworkers were playing a joke on him because he was part of this group called the Brotherhood. It was made up of just white, young White House aides.
Okay.
Who just like playing jokes on each other.
Yeah.
And it's December 21st, so it's around the holidays. Sure. Not so many people around. Like, this is when they had the most fun.
Yeah.
So okay. They're like, okay, someone's pulling my leg.
Yeah.
He wasn't 100% sure that it was a joke.
Uh-huh.
So he's like, okay, I guess I should talk to someone else about this. So he thought that potentially, like, if it was real, it could be a really good, like, publicity stunt.
Sure,
basically.
Yeah, yeah.
So this is a quote from the article in Politico. He said, it wasn't unheard of for people to show up at the White House gate expecting to see the president. Unlike your average Americans dropping by an in-laws or a neighbor's house carrying a cake, these were people who felt that they were important enough to get an unannounced meeting with the president. Or they were a little on the nutty side. Sometimes both. Most of the time they were politely sent away, but sometimes, as is in this case, the guards at the gate would take down the relevant information and route the request through my office.
Okay.
So he was like the Nixon, you know, secretary.
Sure, yeah.
So from there, he looped in a man named Bud Crow. Krug? I think his name is Crow. I'm just going to call him Bud. I don't know how to pronounce his last name. So he was working on a White House program that was trying to get celebrities to publicly denounce drugs and, like, become part of, like, a marketing campaign.
Sure. Sort of like proto-Just Say No.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. So Bud was the head of this program, and he just so happened to be a huge Elvis fan. So okay. Just hearing about it, he's like, fuck yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, sight unseen. He's like, we're doing this.
We need this.
Yeah. Yeah. So he, according to him, he said, like, Chapin and I figured out we ought to make this appointment because one of these guys is the president of the United States, and the other one is the king of the Western world.
Oh, dear. Okay.
Yeah. So Chapin, he drafted a memo to the White House chief of staff, a man named H.R. Haldeman. So he was kind of the gatekeeper.
Mm-hmm.
So urging Nixon to meet with Elvis.
Yeah.
Like, the two of them agreed. They're like, okay, we're going to send this up the chain. So in the memo, he said, it would be wrong to push Presley off on the vice president since it will take very little of the president's time and it can be extremely beneficial for the president to build some rapport with Presley. He added that if the president wants to meet with some bright young people outside the government, Presley might be a perfect one to start with. Sure,
sure.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
So in the margin next, like in this in this memo, the chief of staff, he writes, and I will put this on Instagram, he writes, you must be kidding.
Yeah, seriously.
He's just like, this is insane. But still, he approved the meeting. But his one ask is that Bud screen him first.
Okay.
Yeah.
He's like, this man is clearly crazy.
Yeah, we're not just going to have him roll up into the Oval Office. Yeah. Like, no.
No, this dude is sending tweets and tweets don't even exist yet.
Yeah.
What is happening?
Yeah. So Elvis, meanwhile, he was not at his hotel. He had taken a limo to the Bureau of Narcotics and Dangerous Drugs. What? He just went there. He's like, I'm going to talk to them. He just couldn't wait for Nixon.
Yeah.
So somehow in a man, somehow he managed to get a meeting with the deputy director of the BNDD. What? I don't know how.
What?
The head of it. He gets a meeting with him somehow. And the man is named John Finlitter. So Elvis, he pitched his idea. He volunteered to fight the war on drugs. And he offered to even donate $5,000 to assist the Bureau in their fight.
Okay.
All he wanted in return was just a badge. Yeah. You know, come on, man. Like, be cool about it. Finlitter was not cool about it. He said, no, I don't want your fucking money. And, like, you're not getting a badge.
Get out of here. Yeah.
Good day, sir.
Yeah.
So Elvis is heartbroken. He calls.
Like, are you high? Like, no.
Elvis, he calls his fan Skilling, and he is crying. He's telling him what happened. Crying. Yeah. He's so upset that he was just told no. Thankfully, Nixon had called the hotel and agreed to the meeting.
Dry those crocodile tears.
Yes. So the pre-screen meeting with Bud was scheduled for 8:45 in his office off-site. Like, he wasn't working in the White House. He had an office somewhere else. So Bud would take Elvis over to the West Wing if all went well.
Mm-hmm.
Bud was, again, a really big Elvis fan, but he wasn't trying to lose his job over this.
Sure,
he was a little bit nervous about anyone who would just roll up to the White House unannounced.
Yeah.
He got even more nervous when the Secret Service called him saying that Elvis had arrived for the meeting carrying a gun.
Are you fucking kidding me? Of course.
Literally carrying a gun. Elvis had under his arm a box vintage Colt 45 complete with bullets lined up next to the gun in the frame. It was to be a gift for the president.
This is the gift. Oh my God.
This is the gift. I'm glad that you didn't know. Thank you. I'm glad that you didn't know this because I'm like, everyone knows this story. Okay, this is great. So he had flown from LA to DC with three concealed handguns, all of which he had permits for. Thankfully, he left those in the limo. He didn't bring those into the meeting, but he brought a box. So the box 45, he grabbed on a whim, like as he was heading out the door, according to his man Schilling, he grabbed it from his desk without a word as they were heading out the door. He grabbed it like he was grabbing an umbrella.
Yeah. I might need this vintage gun
with the bullets, you know?
In a gift box.
So after a short back and forth between the Secret Service and Bud, Elvis was allowed to bring in his box and have this meeting.
Okay. Is
everyone on drugs?
Yeah,
the 70s was crazy.
Yeah.
Anything went, clearly, even at this high level. So the screening went well. Bud felt like Elvis was completely genuine in his requests. He was really genuine in wanting to help the country do something about its drug problem. So the Nixon meeting, it was scheduled for 11:45 that same day in the Oval Office. So when Elvis arrived a few hours later, he was, and this is according to his biographer, high as a kite.
Yeah. I mean, he's clearly high as a kite through this entire story.
He is. So he was baked and scratching at a facial rash the whole time.
Oh, my God.
So he wore a purple velvet suit with a boxing champion-style buckle, black cape, and amber-tinted sunglasses.
A cape.
It was a Luke. He came giving you, like, sloppy, old look.
This is clearly, like, later in Elvis's career when he's already kind of
sloppy
lost.
Sloppy Elvis realness.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a moment that... It looked...
Yeah.
There are photos, but they're only in black and white. Which
sure.
So
you can't tell that the suit is purple.
Purple.
Incredible. So this had to be towards the end of his life. Then.
Yeah,
like,
it is.
He wasn't really popular as much anymore.
No. So Elvis came bearing gifts for the president, that vintage Colt 45, and a supply of silver bullets. I'm like, is he a werewolf?
Is he going to kill vampire? Oh, werewolves, yeah.
I'm like, but I think it's because it's like a commemorative item that it's like decorative.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, so usually when visitors arrive to see the president, like an aide brings them into the Roosevelt room, and then they have to wait until the president is ready for them. The king was just escorted straight in.
Ooh.
Yeah, by Bud.
Well, he is a king, after all.
It's true. You have
his royalty.
When Elvis entered... Schilling would later describe that with his swollen, reddened face and his black cape, the king look like Dracula.
Yeah. I mean, literally, he must look like a lunatic. He's in sunglasses. He's scratching his swollen red face.
Yeah.
He shows up with a gun gift.
Yeah. It's such a wild, like, surreal picture of a meeting.
I feel like this is like the meeting between Trump and Kanye West.
A lot of people compare that.
Really?
Yes, a lot. So Elvis is in the Oval Office. He arrives, and within 30 seconds, like, he's kind of starstruck. Like, he can't say anything. He's kind of being shy and, like, weird, according to Bud, who's taking the records. So this is a quote from Bud. The president walked over and started a conversation. Immediately, Elvis whipped out his collection of police badges and showed them to Nixon. Then he displayed snapshots of his wife and daughter. It, like, became like a show and tell.
Sure.
Kind of vibe. Unfortunately, we don't have audio of this, which is so upsetting because Nixon hadn't installed his, like, spy system yet.
Yeah.
So all we have is Bud's notes from the meeting. He kind of writes in, like, a kind of bland bureaucratic style. But some of it is just, it is surreal. So this is another quote. Presley indicated that he had been playing in Las Vegas and that the president indicated that he was aware how difficult it is to perform in Las Vegas. So they're doing this, like, small.
The president knows all about that.
Right? I'm like.
Oh, yeah, I've played.
Right?
I played Vegas.
So fucking weird. It's like maybe he's just feeding off his high energy.
Yeah, I'm like, sure. He's just like, oh, sure.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. So soon Elvis started ranting to Nixon in a drug-fueled tirade on the evil of drugs, which is really fun. The evil of drugs, communist propaganda, and the Beatles, who, according to him, were really anti-American.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. This is a quote. The Beatles had been a real force for anti-American spirit. The Beatles came to this country, made their money, and then returned to England, where they promoted an anti-American theme. He would later say that the Beatles laid the groundwork for many of the problems that we're having with young people by their filthy, unkempt appearances and suggestive music. It's like, are you looking in the mirror, bitch? Like,
seriously, by the 70s, he looked like a mess.
He looked like he was dead. Yeah. Like, he looked... Ugh. And to be... Calling out someone else's unkept appearance.
He's just pissed because they were popular and he wasn't anymore.
Yeah.
They were the new Elvis after
his
career had dried up because he looked like a fucking lunatic.
Madness. Wow. So Bud wrote that while the president nodded in agreement, he expressed some surprise at the Beatles comments. Yeah. He's just like, bitch, what? So it's kind of like the first time that Nixon is like the less paranoid person in the room. Like,
he's the voice of reason.
Like, this is crazy. So the conversation quickly transitioned to just like general complaints about drugs and protest culture. Nixon continued to nod in agreement and said that it was young drug users who were at the forefront of like the protest movement. Mm-hmm. So Elvis, I mean, a 35-year-old current drug user, he, you know, blasted out of his mind on a cocktail of prescription drugs. He assured the president that he was on his side.
Yeah.
Against.
Well, it's fine because they're prescription drugs, so it's legal.
Yeah. So they chatted for about 20 minutes. Blasted Elvis kept scratching at his rash and volunteering, to fight in Nixon's war on drugs. Nixon kept nodding, possibly awkwardly, in agreement. Finally, Elvis popped the question, like, you know, now that we're, like, pals, bro, like, can I get one of those badges?
Oh my God, to be a fly on the wall right? in this room.
Oh.
Holy shit.
So Nixon like looks over to Bud and is like, do we have badges? And he's like, yeah, we have badges. Like, he's like, okay, give him one. He says, do it, make it happen. Elvis is overcome with joy. He thanked Nixon emphatically. And then without warning, he grabbed his shoulders and hugged him.
I imagine Nixon's probably not a big hugger.
No. No.
Oh, wow.
Drugs, man. Wow. So as he was guided out of the office by Nixon, Elvis asked, you know, can you shake the hands of my friends, like the two guys who had come with him? Nixon agreed. So while the aides fetched his men, the president sat down and he started to sign a stack of papers. And when he finished, he turned to his aide and asked, what was that I just signed? And then apparently Elvis had a tee-hee over that.
Like, what did I sign?
Yeah. So when Elvis's friends arrived, Nixon gave the men commemorative White House cufflinks. But that wasn't enough for Elvis. He said, you know, sir, they've got wives. So So Nixon gave them each souvenir White House brooches for the missus.
God.
And then the four men, they shook hands and they posed for over 28 pictures that are now
28
pictures that are now the most requested photographs in all of the National Archives.
What?
By far. These are the pictures that people want to see.
That's so weird. Yeah. But also 28 pictures back in the day of like film cameras. That's a lot of fucking pictures.
Yeah.
Like, I can take 28 pictures on my iPhone in, like, 3 seconds flat.
Yeah.
But back in the day, you're, like, your old wind-up point-and-shoot.
Mm-hmm. 28 pictures. So this whole bizarre encounter, it lasted less than a half an hour. At Elvis's request, it was kept secret, or private with a capital P. The White House staffers, they didn't really think that this event was worth leaking to the press. There was just so much going on at the time. They're just like, another crazy thing happened,
yeah,
I guess.
Yeah.
But 13 months later, the White House chief of staff, the one who wrote, "You must be kidding," mm-hmm. he leaked it to the press.
Okay.
So this is a
13 months, though. I wonder why he waited so long.
I know.
Yeah.
So weird.
A year and a half later or whatever, maybe he needed public support more.
Yes.
Yeah.
Exactly. So this is a quote from the article. "By presidential dictum, Elvis Presley, the swivel-hipped singer, has been issued a federal narcotics badge." And it went on to say that, quote, "The emotional Presley was so overwhelmed at getting his own genuine gold-plated badge that tears sprang from his eyes, and he grabbed the president in a Hollywood bear hug."
A Hollywood bear hug. You know those famous Hollywood bear hugs?
Yeah, I'm like, what does that mean? It's just a bear hug.
Yeah.
So this story came at the height of the Vietnam War and the start of the presidential campaign. Okay, so no one gave a shit. No one took notice.
Yeah.
It flew under the radar.
And also Elvis was washed up at this
exactly.
point too.
It was only years later after Nixon's resignation and Elvis's death that the meeting became legendary for its absurdity on almost every level.
Yeah.
Here was the most famous entertainer in history, zonked out on his mind, coming to the White House to denounce drugs, and still convinced the president to give him a federal narcotics badge. Elvis got what he wanted, a special assistance badge, which is a position that doesn't exist.
Yeah.
It is now on display at Graceland. So oh, in a 1990 interview, Nixon recalled Presley's flamboyance in his dress and his shyness. But took major issue with those who criticized Elvis's drug use. Nixon said, without a trace of irony, that the drugs he took were prescription and not illegal.
Uh-huh. Of course.
Incredible. Mm-hmm. The end.
The end. That is the wildest fucking story I've ever heard on this show. Holy shit.
Oh, it was such a joy to research. I'm just like, what?
This is incredible.
He was pulling over people in Memphis? What?
Can you imagine you get pulled over and it's like, hi, I'm Elvis. I have no authority, but like, hey, don't speed. That's bad.
The police there fucking loved him. They let him do whatever he wanted.
Of course, because he's giving them money
and
shit.
He's giving them money, yeah. Yes.
You've shined a new light on Elvis. I like Elvis. I like Elvis's music. Certain songs. I like early Elvis where it's sort of more country, like rockabilly.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I dig the more rockabilly. Later when it gets like really ballady, I'm not
familiar with his music so much. As in, not but hand
dog. Yeah, that's earlier stuff that I kind of like.
Yeah,
But it's definitely.
It slaps, I get it.
I like the rockabilly stuff is fun because it doesn't feel like it's as much of like theft of black culture.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
He put his own spin on it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What a nut job. Holy fuck.
Unbelievable. Like every detail in this story is just like my mouth is open.
The rash on his face.
The rash on his face.
Purple suit, sunglasses. He's wearing
belt,
a cape.
Cape, black cape, amber sunglasses,
wrestling belt.
Gun.
Silver bullets.
Yep.
I love it.
I am that emoji with the hands out.
Wow. Thank you for that.
Yeah.
That is.
Thought it was a good one.
I think it's time for more cocktails.
Yeah.
I'm going to do some some barbiturates. And
yeah, some testosterone and
antihistamines.
Yes.
And maybe some X-lax.
A smidge of X-lax.
I think X-lax goes really well with White Russians.
I could see that. Yeah. I could see that.
Some milk of magnesia instead of half and half.
Ew. Yuck.
Okay.
Yuck.
It's time for a break. Beyond Reproach is proudly recorded in Bushwick, Brooklyn, on land belonging to the Lenape Nation. Please note that we are not historians. We're just a couple of drunks who never shut up and love history. A full list of all source information can be found in the show notes on our website. Please take a moment to rate, review, and subscribe. And remember that written reviews are especially important. If you like us, please do one of two things. Leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, or send this episode to a friend, family member, or someone who you think would be into it. Don't forget to follow us on social media, and make sure you follow us on Instagram because we post our cocktail recipes the Thursday before each full episode. Please drink along with us if you are not driving. We also have a shop at beyondreproachpod.com. Get your merch, brand yourselves, and we have exclusive content on Patreon where you can directly support the production of our show.